Okay, Chevra, we have one more haftarah to do during Bein HaZmanim. We will be back normally Thursday. Okay, so right now Eretz Yisrael and America and Chutz La'aretz are not on the same parasha. In Eretz Yisrael, we read Shemini this past week. Those of you who went home to Chutz La'aretz for Pesach will have missed Shemini. If you're coming back to Israel, we will be reading Tezri Mitzvah this week. So I just want to quickly cover the Haftarah of Shemini, and then when we start again on Thursday, we will go to Tezri Mitzvah. So I won't read through everything because it's a very famous story. The Haftarah of Parsha Shemini deals with with David's attempt to bring the Aron to Yerushalayim. The first time he attempts to bring it to Yerushalayim, so he brings it with many, many people. He puts it on a wagon from the house of Avinadav. And Uzzah and Achio, the sons of Avinadav, they are the ones in charge of the wagon with the Aron. And then as they are taking it, David is celebrating in front of the Aron with many, many instruments. Now, at some point, when they got to Goren Nachon, so Uzzah attempts to stop the Aron from falling off of the wagon, because it didn't move, the oxen had shifted it. So Uzzah sticks out his hand to save it, and Hashem gets angry at him, and Hashem kills him. David is very upset by this. He's scared by it. It says in Pasuk Ted, "Vayirad David is Adonai bayomahu." Remember, "Ech yavo elai Aron Adonai." How can I possibly bring the Aron? V'lo avad David lahasir elav es Aron Adonai al ir David. Vayateu David base Oved Edom Agiti. So instead, he moved it into the house of Oved Edom, and it stayed there for 3 months. At that point, Hashem blessed the house of Oved Edom and his whole household. David heard about this, heard that the house was blessed, so he realized that the Aron wasn't necessarily dangerous if you treated it properly. So this time, he tried to bring the Aron again with the celebration, but this time, every six paces of the wagon, he would, every six paces, rather, of the Aron, he would shecht a carbon. He'd bring a carbon, and again he would dance and celebrate. And with that, with this process, he brought it to Ir David, and then we get the story of Michal, which we'll come back to. So this unit of the story is obviously very parallel and also very different in many ways from Parshas Shemini. Parshas Shemini opens with the inauguration and story post-inauguration of the Mishkan. Specifically, when Nadav and Avihu brought an Esh Zarah to the Beis HaMikdash, to the Mishkan, they weren't commanded, and Hashem kills them. And the fundamental theme of that story is that they didn't recognize the proper limits. They attempted to become closer to Hashem than they were supposed to, and for that, Hashem punished them. Ramosha, in his analysis, suggests at some level that the fundamental lesson of the Mishkan is that you need to balance properly the Avodah Me'Yirah of Avodah Me'Ahava, and the Yirah, the fear of God, is supposed to limit you and realize that as much as you want to become close to God, and the Beis HaMikdash and the Mishkan are in fact places in which you should come close to God, Yirah should teach you that you should limit yourself to the laws that Hashem has set out, that there is a distance. This dialectic is obviously emphasized in the pasuk of Gilu Bir Adah from Tehillim. For those of you who are interested, Professor Wolf, who I assume some of you have met from around the Beis Medrash, gave the Yartzeit shiur for the Rav this past week on the topic of the dialectic between Ahava and Yira and the thought of the Rav, and it's a central theme in the thought of the Rav, really building on the Rambam, where the Rambam says that Ahava and Yira are Talui Zebazeh, that Ahava is engendered by understanding the greatness of what Hashem has done, the creation of the world, and when you get to that point, you immediately realize how great God is, and you jump back in fear that the process of approaching God should bring you to the realization of how great God is, and mimela, that causes you to jump back in fear, to recognize the limits that there must be between you and God. I mean, the Mishkan is a place where this dialectic has to be very carefully managed, and if you don't manage it, so then you get a Nadav and Avihu story. Now, obviously, in Chazal, there are many different suggestions as to what their sin was. Many of them, in different ways, focus on the lack of limits that Nadav and Avihu had, not just in terms of bringing carbon out, other possibilities, right, playing on the next psukim in the parsha, that perhaps they were drunk, or perhaps the other limits, they didn't understand authority, the suggestion Chazal that they paskin without asking Moshe. Again, that's an emphasis, they don't recognize limits, whether it be directly with God or with other authority figures who have religious significance. But anyway, at any rate, that's one of the fundamental themes of Parshas Shmini. At least the first half of Parsha Shmini, before we get to the discussion of Kashrus. So that notion comes up here as well, that we have here an attempt to use the vehicle of Ahava, right? The constant emphasis in the Haftorah, in this parak in Nach, that David is rejoicing with all the instruments, to the point where Michal contemptuously says to him that you've humiliated yourself by acting like a fool in front of the commoners. But we have this emphasis on the happiness. But at least the beginning, there isn't that tempering of Yira. And then after Uzzah dies for inappropriately sticking out his hand to support the Aron, that's where in Pasuk Tet you get that David feared God. Vayirad David es Hashem bayomahu. So Moshe suggests that that's really the main theme that's gleaned from the Haftorah, at least at that point, that you need to balance the Ahava and Yira. You can't just have the Ahava. Otherwise, terrible things can happen. He notes that this seems to play itself out in the second half of the story when they try to bring the Aron the second time, as we mentioned before, that he shechs a carbon every six paces. That's a much more, even though there was still the simcha, there's still the dancing, that notion that I can't move anywhere without a carbon, without showing submission to God, seems to show the corrective. Moshe notes correctly that while in our story in Shmuel, it doesn't sound like David is actually the one who has to do tshuva for what happened with Uzzah. It sounds like Uzzah was the one who made the mistake. In Divrei Hayamim, David does take responsibility and assumes at some level that it was his fault. And in order to fix it, this time when he brings the Levim, he forces them to be mitire themselves. So the story becomes not just one of Uzzah's breach and death, but of David's breach and recognition of the problem and fixing it through the process of the Karbanot and the Levim. So it's not just that our story is about Uzzah, who breached this Ava Yira relationship with Hashem, and therefore died parallel to Avihu. But in fact, David is also part of this process where he makes a mistake and he learns his lesson and attempts to fix it. Now, of course, Uzzah's sin is not quite the same as Nadav and Avihu. Uzzah, it seems like it's not a, you know, it's more of a familiarity problem, that he's willing to reach out and grab it. Moshe suggests that, right, that perhaps he grew up with the Aron in his house, and it was too familiar to him, so it's a slightly different problem, a familiarity problem. Alternatively, as Chazal understand it, that perhaps the mistake was that the Aron should be Nosei Etz Atzmo. He should have recognized that the Aron wouldn't fall, and he didn't have the proper understanding of how great the Aron was, which is, again, a related concept. Now, it should be noted that in addition to just the thematic connection, the notion that the Aaron was in the house of Abinadav, that name really does also ties us in to the Bnei Aaron, as Rav Shaviv points out in his analysis of the Haftarah. So it seems like even the Psukim are at some level connecting the two stories, not just thematically, but also linguistically. So I think that's really Pachod Yoter, the main connection between the bulk of this story and our parsha. This notion of the limits that must be placed, the limits on exuberance or familiarity with the Kodesh, the necessity of mixing that with Yira. Now, another point, though, that should be noted is that while the story in Chumash is about the Mishkan, about the Mishkan itself, here we're talking specifically about the Aron, and as Rav Moshe notes, that should make us wonder what exactly the difference between the stories are, how exactly they're connected. Of course, one can just note that bringing a ketores, which is what Nadav and Avihu did, that's brought in the Makom Ha'aron, and the Kodesh HaGadashim is really the Makom of Aaron, so at some level, really, they might be very, very connected, despite the fact that one is the Mishkan and not directly on the Aaron, and this one is more directly a problem with the Aaron. Okay, so that's the first half of the Haftorah. The Svardim finish the Haftorah there, or at least after Michal's critique of... before the critique, but after Michal sees him and becomes contemptuous of David, that's where the Svardim finish it. Right? They bring the Aron, he blesses the people, and he gives out wine and meat and bread to the entire people so everyone could celebrate. Now, the Ashkenazim continue with the dialogue between Michal and David, where Michal says, "Why were you mevazir yourself by dancing so much?" And David answers that perhaps it's his willingness to be mevazir himself this way that distinguishes him from Shaul, and that's why he became king and Shaul lost it. I think that unit of the story connects to the opposite side of the equation, which is that there should be an element of Ava and to the point where you're willing to allow it to overcome you, even to the point of being mevazi yourself in a certain way, of bringing yourself down a few notches, which Shaul kind of did not have according to David, and David did, so that does again fit into this equation. Then there's an entire other unit that we have in the Ashkenazi after part starting in Perek Zion, and this is David's attempt to build the Beit HaMikdash. And he says, "Look, now I'm sitting in my palace, and Hashem is not sitting in a permanent dwelling. That's not right." So he goes to Natan, and he says, "I want to build a Beis HaMikdash." Natan is in favor of it, but Hashem ends up telling him that that it's not time yet. That it will be done by his, that only after there's peace and after the dynasty has been established, it will be given to Shlomo. So I don't want to dwell on that too much, but Rav Shaviv suggests that perhaps the second element connects to an important part, which we haven't talked about yet, which is that here we're talking about the Mikdash, and in the Parsha we're talking about the Mishkan. And the Mishkan is a moment in time which is, by definition, temporary. That the fact that we have a movable mikdash, and not a, which we call a mishkan, and not the permanent mishkan, and mikdash rather, points to the fact that Hashem's permanent place is not established yet until we've reached the goal of an established government with peace in Eretz Yisrael, where we can successfully implement the society of the Torah. And that's really the moment that we're at here in the Haftarah as well, where David thinks that we've reached that moment. Hashem says, no, no, we're not quite there yet. Yes, it was right that you brought the Aron here, but it's not time to build the Beis HaMikdash. We're still in transit, in a certain sense, even though now we're in the right place. Right, as a nation, we're still moving towards a goal. We haven't reached that pinnacle. And I think that's an important idea in the Haftarah as well, that perhaps that's part of the connection, that even though here we're talking about the Mikdash, and there we're talking about the Mishkan, this notion in order to fully establish the Makom Hashchina, that all of Klal Yisrael needs to be ready politically and socially, I think is something that may come out of this dialogue about the inappropriate time to build a Beis HaMikdash and is inherent in the structure of the Mishkan. Okay, we'll continue with Tazria Mitzera on Thursday. We will see you soon.